Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I feel like the topic of conversation around postnatal bodies, it's only ever in terms of weight. Like, oh, are you going to snap back? Are you going to bounce back? Or people being like, wow, you've really lost the baby weight. And I was like, this is so rank that like the baby's inside you and your body's doing this amazing thing growing. And then the moment it's out, people consider it like, oh, are you getting rid of this? Or have you thought about getting rid of this?
Welcome to The Body Protest.
In this podcast, we combine storytelling and science to better understand our relationship with our bodies. I'm Honey Ross.
And I'm Nadia Craddock, and this is season four. Hi, honey, how are you?
I'm very good, you know. I'm about to say something so geeky, but Animal Crossing has come back into my life in a big way.
I feel like that's very March 2020 for
you. I know, and I couldn't go back for a long time. Like, I spent my pandemic on a fictional island of my own creation. And when I did go back, like, I won't lie, like, it was like flashbacks being like, oh my God, I spent so much time on this tiny pixelated island. But they've brought it back. They've done an update. Everyone's kind of come back like, okay, we're sorry. Like head in hands, like we miss you, Animal Crossing. And I literally spent about 4 hours playing it last night. Like that was my incredible self-care. They've added a game where you basically just design houses for very, very grateful, adorable animals. And they give you a brief. Oh my God, Noddy, it's like heaven. It's a heaven.
Oh dear.
Oh dear is right. I'm like, what has happened? But you know what? No regrets.
I mean, I'm a bit lost for words. I mean, I'm happy for you. And your Animal Crossing word.
All I need is to know that you support it. You're like, okay, I don't get it, but I support it. I'll show you all of the houses I built. I mean, they're stunning. How are you, my gorgeous angel?
I'm very well. Let me just show you my situation.
Please.
Here. We have one drink, number one. Okay. This is hot. Lemon.
Delicious. Very good for the throat.
We have two kind of half drunk glasses of, I think, both water,
okay.
Which is good.
Stay name. Hydrated queen. We love that. I respect that.
We've got the coffee cup, which is the biggest cup of
and
all.
That, like, to clarify for reference, the cup was the size of Nadia's head. It was.
It's not that big. But yeah, there's a lot going on. I've got my roller. Very Sutton straight.
I mean,
keeping us.
We love Sutton. We love Sutton and her self-soothing tactics. We all have a lot to learn from Sutton.
Yeah, obviously a reference to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills for anyone who is not currently watching or actually finished watching. I think the series has finished.
I haven't watched the final.
We've had the finale. The finale.
Have you watched it all?
It's complete. I have. I have watched it all. It is my absolute escapism. It gives me a lot of, I don't know what it gives me, but it gives me a lot of something. And I really do enjoy watching it.
No, it really charges me up. I really feel that. When it, like, I'm in a good flow with it, there is nothing I prefer than watching, like, women yell at each other and throw wine at each other. Like, I mean, I sound like a terrible feminist for saying that.
No, I mean, it is kind of terrible, but I don't know. I don't know what it does for me, but I think where it's so you can just watch and you don't have to think.
No, exactly.
It's probably.
Also, I think it's made me better at conflict resolution because I definitely look at it and go, okay, not that. We're not doing that. That's it. We have a Real Housewives group chat and my favourite thing is everyone has their housewife that they defend. That everyone, like, we know that everyone secretly identifies with a housewife. And it's so interesting when someone, do you ever notice that? Someone will say something about Luann or something. I know that's, you know, New York. But, and then someone will be like, actually, actually, Luann's a really amazing woman and she works really hard. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you see yourself in her.
Yes.
My toxic trait, that used to be Erica Jane for me. So
I was there. I was there with you, but it's now...
It's a hard time for Erica Stans.
There's been a bit of a turnaround.
And yeah, for good reason. I mean, watch The Housewife and The Hustler for more information on that. We will not link it in the show notes.
We will not. But talking about linking things in the show notes, we did not mention this last time, but a very exciting new link in our show notes is our Patreon.
I mean, could you be more excited for our Patreon? It's going to be a game changer. What's nice about Patreon is it means that we can just have a bit more communication and like share a bit more, like things are safer behind a paywall, and the nice thing about it is it's cheaper than a cup of coffee. It's, you know, check it out. If you want to support us, it would mean the world to us. We don't make any money from this podcast, so it really would mean so much. And yeah, we just want to keep making it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's gonna be fun. We're gonna have, if you want more Real Housewives content,
that will be on the
that may be in there. Or
Animal Crossing.
The Animal Crossing, the visuals of the self-seeding technique.
That's the thing. If you want to see Nadia use a jade roller like Sutton, that might be a video.
In not a, actually a very calming way, but it feels
you're
calming.
Doing it very fast, but it...
I know.
But it's the sensation.
It's a sensation. I do enjoy it. My other thing is, this is very much because we've just come out of the cold season. For me anyway, is that I just like sniff Tiger Balm.
I love
all the time. Really love it.
I love Tiger Balm. I'm a bit like that with, like, I love a bit of Vapor Rub. I'm obsessed with Vapor Rub. Like things that are just like,
yeah, well,
powerful.
You can use Tiger Balm as like, and you put like, you put and like on the forehead, but then you have to be very careful not to get it into your eyes, because let me tell you, it stings.
Oh my god, that's like a horror story.
Like nothing else.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
it's like pure condensed like power in Tiger Balm, so like, fuck. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of need to like rub it into your temples like going backwards. And then washing your hands very closely, very carefully. Very good.
I would like a Tiger Balm tutorial from you on the Patreon, please.
Yeah, so there we go. The kind of content.
This is what you can expect.
I mean, if you so
give the
wish.
People what they want. So we're talking to the wonderful Ashley Louise James today. We also were joined by the stunning baby Alfie, who I would really like him to be on every episode of our podcast. So listen out for baby noises, baby gurgles. It's going to be very wholesome. It's like the best kind of ASMR. We have some very good, intense conversations with Ashley. We talk about body dysmorphia, objectification, pretty privilege. We talk about the realities of postpartum bodies that we don't get taught as women. We talk about breastfeeding publicly and being shamed for it. We get into a lot, and it is a fantastic episode that I found personally really empowering. So we hope you enjoy. So today we are very excitingly joined by a wonderful woman, a personal friend, and I'm with her in the flesh, which is even more exciting. It's the incredible, I mean, I don't even know how to describe you because you do so many things and you do them so well. I'm with the wonderful DJ, writer, life coach, mother, Ashley James, who I adore deeply.
Thank you. That was a great intro.
Okay, good.
I've had much worse intros.
Well, I'm glad that was, you know, it was on good standard.
I am actually a bit of a, like, jack of all trades.
Yeah.
Master of none.
I mean, I think you've mastered a lot of trades.
Mastered motherhood, actually.
You really have mastered motherhood. We're currently here with Alf, who is a literal cherub and just sublime. And he's in a velvet two-piece, which is how I'd like to be dressed, frankly.
Yeah, with a fox. And is very interested in the microphone. So what the future holds, who knows?
Yeah, let's see how well this one goes.
Well, I actually also left out another title, which is podcaster, which is a recent development.
Yeah, I actually have a podcast called Mum's the Word. So after vowing to never start a mum podcast, I have exactly that. So in the words of Bieber, never say never.
Never say. Can you tell us a bit about the podcast?
So it's called Mum's the Word. It's basically a parenting podcast. Obviously, well, I say obviously, but it's not obvious at all. I've got a nine-month-old little boy who's here watching YouTube, like the responsible parent that I am. YouTube.
Yeah.
Other children's programs are available. And it's basically just me trying to figure out the journey through the highs and the lows and You know, I gave birth and was pregnant in a pandemic, and there's been lots of extra things to worry about. So I suppose it's a bit like therapy for me, where I just chat to people from different like experiences and expertises, whether that's from a body side of things or from, you know, childbirth recovery, or you know, how, what to do when you feel like you might have made a terrible mistake by having a child, like all of the emotions I guess that you go through. It's I don't shy away from any of the more taboo topics, and also the lovely bits as well.
That's what I love so much about the way you talk about motherhood, is you really kind of express the full spectrum of the journey, and you talk about the highs as much as you talk about the lows. And yeah, I find it really comforting and honest. And I think so many people have reacted to the content you've been putting out, because it is, I mean, it's just so, I was going to say awe-inspiring. It really is, though. It's really vulnerable and so, I mean, refreshing.
Do you know what I think it is? Because it's really nice, but I get told a lot, oh, I love that you're so honest about highs and lows and authentic. And it's not just motherhood. I think it's because I spent most of my 20s trying to be what I thought people wanted me to be. And by the way, that was many different things. Like, my biggest fear was different groups of friends coming together, because I was like, but how can I be like, you know, like all the different Ashleys that I'd kind of like chameleoned myself to be?
Yeah.
I was like, they're going to realise that I can't be all of those things at once. Yeah. And, you know, that was like how I spent pretty much a decade of, maybe longer, of my life. And it was once I started to trust that I could be myself, but also realize that the more you talk about very normal human emotions, the more that you connect with people. Like there's so much humanity and vulnerability. And we also, I think, you know, when we're going through different emotions that aren't joy, then we kind of think we're on our own with them, but they're as normal to experience other emotions as joy. But for some reason, society only kind of praises joy and positivity.
But then also it's like, oh, don't be so smug. I mean, it's like you kind of can't win on the internet expressing any emotion, really, it seems.
Yeah, not for women.
No, not for women. That's the main takeaway.
Ashley, I wonder if you could tell us, it's something we ask all of our guests on the podcast, and please feel free to share as much as or as little as you're comfortable. But if you could share about your relationship with your body growing up.
I'd say pretty uneventful. I actually grew up with no thoughts about my body, really, which I think is quite rare. Like, I don't remember ever worrying about what I ate. I remember finding it confusing that other people worried about what they ate, because I remember being like, what, you're not going to have that? Can I have it? Mm. And I remember it used to, like, really confused me when a friend said to me that she didn't eat pasta because she worried about her weight. And I was like, I remember thinking, but does she really think that meal's going to make a difference to her body? So I think I was quite lucky in that. Yeah. Thank you for that input. I think I was quite lucky in a way that I'd say I got to about 18-ish, 19-ish without any sort of body hang-ups. But looking back, the foundations of having body hang-ups had already begun, because I remember thinking, for some reason, female adults would always say to me, wow, you're so lucky that you can eat all that. When you get a bit older, you won't be able to eat that. And I remember thinking, at what age am I going to get that I suddenly can't eat the food that I want to eat?
Yeah.
And I think all those things kind of stick in your head, don't they? And for some reason, like, the age I had in my head was 25. And so, you know, as I was getting nearer to this age, I was like, what's going to happen when I eat pasta after this age? So then I think I started to diet, but not because I necessarily wanted to or felt like I should, more because I was like, well, this is what people do now when they get to that age. But yeah, that was, I'd say, the relationship I had up to the point that I got quite bad body dysmorphia.
It's very interesting. I mean, I don't know if you absolutely feel free to not speak on this, but you've spoken a bit about like facing sexualization when you were younger.
It's so interesting. So I grew up, I'd say around the age of 11, I got it into my head that I just really wanted boobs. I don't know if it's because I associated that with like being grown up and not being a child. But I remember, I mean, it's so weird looking back, but I would cut out pictures of women with boobs and put them by the fireplace and like pray to Santa, because apparently Santa was my god.
Santa brings the boobs, yeah. Yes.
And I'm like, I just want boobs. And I remember just being like, that was what I thought was like, oh, life will be so great when you have boobs. It was, I don't know if I was obsessed with like being feminine or being grown up or what it was. And then suddenly at 13, I got Santa delivered with 30 double G's, and they kind of came out of nowhere. And it kind of dawned on me very quickly how much people's attitudes and behaviours changed towards me. So this was adults. So I was slut-shamed a lot by friends' parents, and on like genuinely treated as if I was like gonna get their children pregnant if they hung out with me. Wow. And I remember being quite like shocked by it, because I mean, anyone can be as sexually liberated as they want, but at the time I was very much of like, I would never have sex unless I like, unless it's love. And so I remember being a bit confused, like, why are they treating me like this? And teachers at school used to make me change my outfits, and then my friends would say, oh, can we borrow it? And they'd wear the same outfit and it was allowed. And that kind of like taught me to be really ashamed of my body. And also the comments from boys, especially older boys. So bear in mind, I was 13, so I just started senior school, and boys used to come up to me. I mean, looking back, it is like dark, because it would be like, you know, 16, 17, 18 year old boys asking if I was shaven. And I just remember being like, this is actually like so grim. And what it taught me was, if I cover up my body, I can avoid all of this. Around 15, I stopped wearing makeup. I started wearing really frumpy clothes. I don't want to name the brand that I used to wear, because they might listen. and they're perfectly acceptable. But I remember my mum saying, like, even I don't shop here. And it made me, I'd say it actually like really heightened my inner misogyny, because I really, it taught me that you can choose beauty or brains, and you can be sexy or smart. And I suppose when I was saying I had no body issues, I was thinking of it more from like a relationship with my body in terms of my weight. But in terms of my boobs, I hated it, and I still feel really passionately, I'm sat here breastfeeding, so it's ironic talking about boobs now, but yeah, I still feel really angry at how society treats women's boobs as if they're, I saw something in a tabloid the other day, I can't remember which one, saying boobs are back in. And I remember being like, oh, well, thank fuck, I'm back in fashion. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, literally, we all have boobs. Well, we don't all have boobs. Well, we do. Everyone has boobs.
Everyone has breast tissue.
And I was like, isn't that mad that they're considered a fashion accessory, that are back in? Oh, that's all right, so I can get my boobs out now. And also that we judge people's, like, morals and sexuality based on boobs. And also that it doesn't stop when you're breastfeeding, like there's still that judgment and sexualization even when you're feeding a child.
Yeah, and no, it's fascinating. I think hearing you talk about it is really powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Do you think motherhood has helped you love your boobs in that kind of neutral way again?
I think it's helped me to love, like, not just boobs but bodies in general, because it's made me like think like, wow, we really overcomplicate society, everything. Like, it actually isn't about how our bodies look, it's about how they function, like the things that our bodies do for us every single day. And with childbirth, Alf was a really big baby, and I had fecal incontinence, which is essentially where you shit yourself, and very few women experience that, but a lot do. And I had prolapse, and I had piles, and I had stitches, and it kind of gave me like a fear of my body. And I feel like the topic of conversation around postnatal bodies, it's only ever in terms of weight, like, oh, are you going to snap back, are you going to bounce back? And in my head I was like, all people being like, wow, you've really lost the baby weight, and I was like, this is so rank that like the baby's inside you and your body's doing this amazing thing growing, and then the moment it's out people consider it like, oh
yeah,
can we get rid of this? Like, are you getting rid of this? Or have you thought about getting rid of this? And actually for me, I was so fearful of my body, fearful that my stitches hadn't healed and how painful it would be, you know, not to, you talk a lot about like couples who don't have sex after birth or finding the time for each other, but I was like, I'm scared to even like touch myself with my fingers. Like, how on earth could I like feel sexual again? And then fearing that if I go to the park, I might have incontinence and my body, like, will my body ever work again? I'm 34. The average life expectancy, I think, is 87. Like, am I gonna go through this for the rest of my life? And I feel like it's upsetting that people think that we care about weight in all of that when you're growing a baby and you've got not much sleep and you want to talk about if I'm gonna go back to the gym, like, probably not. I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to function. And then in terms of boobs, I definitely did feel like it was a new part of my journey. So I talked a bit about being a teen and then, you know, learning that if you covered up. Alf had very strong opinions on this. As a teen, it was like, okay, what I've learned is you cover up and you're taken seriously. And then in my 20s, I suppose that continued because I was working, so I felt like I had to cover myself up. And then I kind of got to my late 20s and 30s and I was like, do you know what, I deserve to feel sexy. I deserve to wear clothes that I want, and if people have a problem with it, that's their issue. So I did start to like really embrace wearing, like, well, I guess showing off my cleavage and enjoying it and thinking, if people have a problem with this, this is their problem and not my problem. And then when I was breastfeeding, I suppose it felt very much like I'd reclaimed my boobs back from a patriarchy that sexualized them. However, they are still sexualized. And I do think it's this kind of like Madonna whore complex in society that people can't get their head around the fact that they're boobs, but it's a baby. And it's like, but oh my God, that they're sexual, but there's a baby feeding on them. So people say that it should be this intimate thing. And I'm sorry, it's not anal. It's... Do you know what I mean? No. It's like, sorry to be like so crass, but it is literally like...
It's like,
I'm literally like, would you be offended? Like, would you criticise a mum who's bottle feeding? Because both are very valid ways to feed a baby. Yeah. And...
I know, I feel the same way.
So yeah, it is mad to me that even when you're doing something like breastfeeding, which is literally giving food to a child, it's considered something that should be intimate, that you shouldn't take pictures of, that you're criticised for, or weirdly that men will still kind of come in your DMs online and like comment on your boobs and you're like, really? I'm literally feeding a child, like... Yeah.
Take a day off.
Yeah. Truly. Like, not that people deserve it if they're not feeding a baby, but it's like... Really, even now?
Yeah. No, but it's so interesting of like, it's similar with the kind of the concept of snapback of pregnant women are kind of lauded as like these saintly, like, wow, you're glowing and you're radiant. And the minute the baby's out, they're like, I don't want to be reminded that your body did this. Please get rid of the weight that you gained to help feed the child. Please don't show us the thing you're doing currently to feed the child. Which is why I think what you're doing is so important in kind of normalising all of that, because I think so many people feel really isolated and like, especially a lot of pandemic parents, I'm sure, feel really isolated because they haven't had the opportunity to kind of speak to people about this in this way.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, praising or shaming women for their bodies, well, point blank, ever, it's bad. But especially after giving birth, it's like, I know people that have lost a lot of weight. For example, I lost loads of weight recently because I had COVID. I was really ill and I didn't sleep because Alf was really ill with COVID, and I lost loads of weight because I was sick. And I was a bit, people were like, wow, you look amazing. Like, how have you lost the baby weight? And I was like, a near-death experience? Like, thanks. Like, and it's like, and I've had friends who've lost the weight, maybe through depression, maybe through, you know, maybe because that is just what their bodies naturally did. And it's like they feel embarrassed or ashamed that they don't want to show off their body online, especially because they are told that they're irresponsible because they're not role models because they've lost the weight too fast. And it's like, we need to get over this obsession that losing weight equals good or irresponsible because you're, and gaining weight or keeping weight is bad, because it's like, everyone's bodies are different, but also like it doesn't matter, like, it and actually a lot of the time if you lose weight very quickly, it's actually probably because of something negative, and the fact that people celebrate it, it's a very confusing thing.
It's
this is a slightly ironic question, because obviously we're talking about weight and bodies and things, but it's almost like, how do we stop people talking about weight and bodies, or maybe particularly weight? I just wonder, and it's just almost like a thinking out loud question, but like, how do we stop that always being like front and center of what people are talking about, or how do we kind of maybe gently redirect that conversation?
I think you can say, wow, you look great, without making any comment on whether that's due to weight, number one. Mm-hmm. I think you can be like, how are you? Have you recovered? How's your recovery? Because bear in mind, like, that I do find it a little bit weird that so much of childbirth is taboo and so much of our bodies is taboo, and the education around the female body is like outrageous. And I actually didn't do NCT, but apparently when they do a little bit about what the vagina, the vulva and everything goes through during childbirth, they actually send the men away. Obviously, wow. If you're in a heterosexual relationship, they send the men away to have a cup of tea, because it's like, right, ladies, shh, shh, shh. And it's like, I feel like that also puts a lot of pressure and shame around, like, men need to know what is happening, because also a lot of women are embarrassed to talk about how their vagina's changed, or the fact that they're scared of potential stitches, or the fact they've got piles, and all of these things. And it shouldn't be a taboo, in the same way that if you go for an operation on your knee and you have stitches on your knee, or you need a crutch temporarily, like, all of these things are part of the recovery. And I was almost like excited to I was very excited to experience childbirth, but I was also like, wow, finally I get to uncover this mystery of what happens to the female body, because I feel like people are pretty open about pregnancy and, you know, oh, my back aches and I need to sit down, or whatever it might be. And then they would give birth and there would almost be like radio silence for a couple of weeks, and then there'd be suddenly an announcement like, we give birth, this is the weight of the child.
Yeah.
Like, mother and baby doing well. And in my head I'd be like, doing well? But how can you be well when you've either had a C-section or a vaginal birth? Like, surely you can't be well.
Yeah.
In the same way that if you've just come out of like another form of operation, yeah, they're not going to be like, yeah, they're doing well. It's like, so I think it's more realizing that weight is actually irrelevant to recovery. And actually, if someone has lost weight very quickly, it's being mindful, like, hey, how's your sleep? How are you finding it? How's the adjustment? Would you like me to come round so you can have a shower or a nap? As opposed to being like, wow, congratulations on the weight loss.
Yeah, you're like, that's the last thing you're thinking about.
So yeah, I think it all, and ultimately it all comes down to education, isn't it? It's all about understanding more what people go through in childbirth and motherhood, and also understanding bodies. And you know, I think things like this podcast, things like the advertising rules changing, it all helps to kind of take away the idea that skinny, thin, small, shrinking ourselves equals happier and better and
healthier
because it doesn't.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think what you said also there was so important, in terms of there's so much that we don't know in terms of what happens to women's bodies when they give birth. Like, I've had over the last couple of years multiple friends having babies and just what their bodies are going through, and I feel like I've learned a lot, like, kind of like secondhand through that. Is there anything that you feel that everyone should know? Is there anything you want to, like, say out on the podcast that you're like, oh yeah, this happens, or like, we should all know this about what happens when people give birth? And I know it can be very different, and maybe that's part of it.
I think just that it takes more time than people think to recover, and that could be mentally, physically, all of it, because everybody knows that it takes 9 months to grow a baby, but for some reason people kind of expect mums, parents, whoever gave birth, to kind of get back to normal, I say, after like 6 weeks. And that is just such a crazy expectation on our bodies. Like, I didn't realize that basically your spine, your pelvis, like, all of these bones expand to make space for a baby. Wow. And then people are suddenly like, oh, so are you gonna snap back? It's like, my bones are still not even in place yet. Like, yeah. And I find that my bones, I see them still changing, and I'm after 9 months postpartum. Apparently it takes a whole year for female bodies to recover from the process. So I think, yeah, it's just
understanding that even if someone says they're fine, like, just be like, I don't know, do you want me to go for a walk with you? Do you want me to come over so that you can nap or shower or
yeah.
And also stop thinking that it's a compliment to comment on someone's weight.
I feel like you've slightly answered this already, but what really surprised you about your postpartum journey, apart from kind of the time that it takes?
I mean, the time it takes was a big one because I think also that I'm not totally invincible, because I remember going into pregnancy being like, I love fashion and I love heels and I'm going to be like this glamorous person that I am now. I want to be that person in motherhood, because I had so much like inner misogyny around what I thought being a mum was. And I was like, I don't want to be like that, whatever that is. And it was when I got to 30 weeks pregnant that I got really bad pelvic girdle pain. And I basically couldn't walk towards the end of my pregnancy because of you. And I fully then expected, because I love doing exercise for my mind. Like I've always had really bad anxiety, and I'm exercising, even if it's like skipping. I don't care what the exercise is. I just have to enjoy doing it. Usually boxing, because like nothing makes me happier than like imagining the people or things that are making me angry at that time against a punch bag. It's great. It's like therapy. And I fully expected to be back doing that after 6 weeks, and I'm still not back doing any of that. So that's like challenging on my mind, but also I didn't really understand, I think, what the pelvic floor did, and the fact it is literally a hammock that keeps all of our genitals and our core up. And wow. Again, like, this is something that annoys me that we're not taught about our bodies, because I didn't realize how important it was to be exercising it and
doing your kegels.
And that's so important even if you don't have children. And I think, you know, a lot of the things that I experienced, like prolapse and piles and all of this thing, is because I kind of saw childbirth as a bit like doing a marathon. And by that, I mean that I didn't do any exercise and I was like, it's a battle and I will make it to the end. Whereas actually you can do things to prevent long-term damage, and because we don't talk about bodies, I didn't know any of those things. So then obviously my recovery has been much slower with things like incontinence. And I also didn't realize that lifting a baby is not necessarily the best thing to do after giving birth, because again, it's loading up your pelvic floor. So in the time that your pelvic floor needs to recover, so I always had Alf in a baby carrier because it was like so cute and nice to carry him around. And then I was like, oh no, I literally just need to sit down. And I think society expects us to get up and go, and actually praises people. I see people being like, wow, you're back to work in 5 days. That's amazing. And actually it's like, I mean, it is amazing if that's what you want to do. It's a choice, but it's also not that amazing. Like, you're not even meant to drive a car after a C-section for 6 weeks, but yet we worship people that go back to doing everything straight away.
Well, I mean, it kind of feels like as we always say on the podcast, comes back to capitalism in that way of like, how quickly can you, you know, go back to normal and get back on the job, get back on the grind. It's ripped. People are so applauded for doing that. And it's like, your body has just gone through a huge change, a huge transition, grown a whole bloody human. And then you're expected to just, I mean, yeah, like you said, be out and about and living. And it's like, no, you've got a little human. Look at you, are so gorgeous. I can't even cope.
So cute. I'm like desperate for cuddles through the screen.
I know. I'm like, oh.
The other thing that I hear and see from friends who are mums, and then kind of how that kind of escalates out, is that there just seems to be, it feels like there's so much pressure on mums that there then becomes a lot of comparison.
Honestly, I've never experienced sisterhood like it since becoming a mum, but I've also never experienced that sort of judgment and comparison. And everything feels very Brexit, like whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, whether you sleep in the bed or sleep in a cot. Like, and I think a lot of it is because people worry. I think people are so passionate about raising their children in the best way they can. Of course they're passionate about it, that if other people do it differently, they either think, well, that person must be wrong, or they think, oh, well, that person must be judging me, or am I doing it wrong? So it's a very, like, heated debate, I suppose. And actually, people just need support. They don't always, and also, what works for my baby won't work for someone else's baby. Like, we are all so different. So so yeah, I think it's just remembering that it's okay to do things in each other's ways. And actually, you know, my sister couldn't breastfeed and she bottle feeds, and I would never ever ever like judge her or make her feel bad for her choice, in the same way that I would hate for her to make, I would only want her support as well. So I think it's just, yeah, remembering that everyone's different, and there's no right or wrong way to parent. But there are wrong things to say, like even with breastfeeding, that, funny enough, it's such a like full-time job, more than I even realised. And actually, the only things people really ask is, are you going to get a boob job after breastfeeding?
What?
And
I was like,
yeah, it's weird.
Oh my god.
And people, and like the topic, and actually I don't know what my boobs will look like after breastfeeding, because I've never done it before and I've never stopped before. But there seems to be this myth that, you know, your boobs will be ruined. And again, it's this thing around body image, that perky boobs, porn boobs, you know, like they seem to be like the only boob that is admired in society. And I definitely have stretch marks, especially after like a day where my boobs are emptying. I really notice stretch marks, and there's not one bit of me that thinks my child is ruining my body. I'm like, it's part of like my story and my journey, and it makes me a bit sad that people think that that's an acceptable thing. Essentially, they're saying to me like, is he really worth ruining your boobs for, and will you fix it?
Oh my god. What are other things that people should avoid saying to new parents, or parents in general?
I think just like putting their own, asking about snapping back, we've obviously discussed that one a little bit. I think trying to fix your problems, like, so if you say you're not sleeping, everyone has a solution of something that will help. And it's like, but actually some children don't sleep in the night, and I don't need you to tell me that it's down to something I'm doing wrong. I just need you to be like, wow, that must be so tough. Like,
just be supportive.
Yeah, would you like to go upstairs for a nap? Do you know, like, as opposed to being like, have you tried this? Or like, of course a lot of people say it to be nice, but there's, I think a lot of people say it because they want to feel like they know more than you.
Yeah,
it's one of those things that can be so well-intentioned, but also not always what you need to hear. And as you say, all kids are different. And I guess what I'm thinking about, right at the beginning, you're talking about your relationship with your body, and especially in terms of like weight, you were never bothered by. How do you understand that? And did you have like positive influences with your parents or anything like that that maybe nurtured you? Because it's quite unusual to as a teen to not struggle.
Do you know what? It's weird, because looking back, I wouldn't say my mum was a particularly positive role model in terms of eating, because I remember she used to be always on these weird diets where she'd only eat cottage cheese or Quavers, but she never talked about it around me. So yeah, I suppose I apart from people saying you're lucky that you can eat what you want, when you get to a certain age you won't be able to, I never really had anyone ever talk about food as a event around me. It was just something that we did to feed our bodies. So yeah, I suppose I was lucky in that sense. But I think as well, this is, it's a really weird thing because I don't know how to say it in the right way, but it was only when I got boobs, which I've referenced, that I started to get male attention. And I remember being like, me? Because I was always like quite geeky and quite nerdy, and I was never like, I never tried to fit in, but I wasn't unpopular for whatever it was, but I was just a bit of a like, I was just another kid at school, like you know, there was nothing particularly stand out about me. And then suddenly to get like all this attention from guys, very sexual attention, but it was attention, and it was something that I'd never had before. I never had like the cool kids wanting to hang around me, that I almost like wish that I'd almost been prepped a bit more for, like, this is the kind of experience that you might have. Because I think as a teenager, I started to really value being pretty and like all that kind of sexual attention, I kind of took it on as like, oh, I'm so popular now. Like, and I almost wish somebody had said, you know, that lot of, you might get attention because you're an attractive young girl, but there's more, you know, like sexual attention isn't necessarily, and yeah, that, and also sexual attention isn't necessarily the only attention. Like, you could have roses, or like, you know, because I'd almost like feed off this like quite horrific attention looking back. And I think it made me quite like image orientated in a way that I hadn't been. And so then when I got to around 25, when I quit my job and I did reality TV, that was when I suddenly felt like all my worth was set upon being this sort of sex symbol or sex icon. And actually it was so far away from my upbringing or from what I valued myself as, that I almost felt like I then had to switch off like the brain side of it and suddenly be like the sexy one. And it took me probably till like my 30s to be like, wait, you're allowed to,
you can be both. Yeah. You can be, because the thing is, you are obviously a very sexy lady, but you are so smart. You are incredibly, incredibly smart. And it's, you know, what was your aha moment that kind of helped you realize that you could be every facet of yourself?
I think it was more just like learning about feminism and the way people treat women compared to men. And I remember even like, I think was it a few years ago, the Finnish Prime Minister, a female, posed for a cover of a magazine in a blazer, and it was low, it was she wasn't wearing a shirt underneath, and there was this debate globally about whether this was an appropriate attire for a world leader. And I remember being like, but that has nothing to do with her ability to lead. And I think it was just the more I started to see things in the media, and especially when it was like written stuff that was written about me, because I feel like obviously when it's you, you're like, but that's not who I am. And I remember in like, you know, like looking through the tabloids thinking like, I don't even like this version of me, because it would be very much like Ashley James flaunts her ample assets as she parades her cleavage through the town, and it would be literally like me in a dress going to a, like something work related.
And it, no, but it they're implying even, you're like Jessica Rabbit, like, yeah, and it's like, just like, you're just existing.
I literally put on a dress, and then I remember I was talking to a brand and they wanted to do a campaign, and it was all around feminism, and they'd said you'd be perfect, and then they went away and came back and said, oh, actually the head office have said that you're not feminist enough, because they see like all the articles written about you in the tabloids. And I was like, you know, I don't write them. And so that, I think that's when I started to like really fight for, instead of like in the past I would have been like, oh my god, they think I'm not feminist enough, right, let me like throw in my sexy dresses and I'm going to cover up my cleavage and like dress in that sensible way that I felt like I should, which worked at school, because the moment I stopped wearing makeup and started wearing like what I would say is frumpy clothing, then I was treated better at school, even though I was still producing like the same grades. So I think it was more like the stubbornness that I was like, I will prove that you can be both, like you can. And also like our looks should not define us. And certainly don't define someone's ability to rule a country. I mean, imagine if we gave Boris Johnson the same scrutiny about what he wore.
Exactly. No, it's so true. It's such an insane double standard. I think it's interesting of you talking kind of, to me it sounds like there isn't enough conversation around pretty privilege, and there isn't enough conversation around the flip side of pretty privilege, which is being reduced to that and feeling like that is all you have to offer. And it's a very strange conversation, because it kind of is like no one's happy under this system of kind of like, you get reduced to either one thing, and it's people are so multifaceted and have so much to offer.
I think it's also a hard thing to say, because like, have I had pretty privilege? Absolutely. Do I consider myself beautiful or pretty? No. So when you, it's like, I can recognise that, I don't know, like in what ways have I had pretty privilege? Like, I would go to a nightclub and sit at a table with a load of creepy old men. Prettiness is almost put on this pedestal, like, oh wow, imagine if you're pretty, like everyone would want to be pretty. But I remember just thinking like, I just want to be respected, or I just want people to like take me seriously. And this goes down to everything, you know, I DJ, and I used to be in a duo with my friend Charlotte, and she, I mean, she's beautiful, but she's much more edgy and she's brunette, and people would come up to the DJ decks and be like, oh, so I presume you're the DJ. And I would be like, well, no, we both DJ. And people would be like, yeah, but you obviously just stand here and look good. And I remember being like, should I dye my hair? Will this, like, make you think I'm better at my job? Or, like, yeah, it's a weird thing, but... I feel like there is no winners in a society that puts so much value on looks. Like, even if you look at, like, supermodels or, you know, like, some of the most beautiful women in the world, actresses, and then you look at the surgery that they have, and again, I'm not against surgery, but you're like, even the people that are, like, hailed as the most beautiful people in the world obviously have body hang-ups and self-esteem issues, because actually... Even the models don't look like the models, and I know that from when I used to model. I would, like, get these images back of myself. I'd be like, that's not my body. Like, they've literally just changed my body. And so then I'd be like, oh, now do I need to change the way I look? So that's, like, it was, like, horrifying to think that a photographer would go back to the studio and be like, she's a bit wide hips there, or, like, let me lower her boobs a little bit, or whatever it would be. And even the models don't look like the models, and what does that tell you about society?
I've heard that a lot. I mean, obviously we know models are photoshopped, but then it's like we don't always stop and think, how does that make the model feel? Whoever's doing the edit is dictating, like, this is how you should look, or this is how we, like, enhance appearance and things. And I think, yeah, it's very much comes back to our, like, capitalist patriarchal society, that it's like putting so much pressure on women in particular, and it's like so narrow and the ideal is so restricted. But maybe to move on and wrap us up, what is it that you do to feel good in your body now?
Have a lot of baths. Nothing makes me feel better in my body than lying in a bath with incense, candles. I think that sounds silly, but it is, it's an act of self-love. Like, I don't know, being able to walk in the park through nature, it's like all the things, just being able to move your body. And to be honest, being able to go to the park and not shit yourself, like, I will love my body forever, honestly. Like, after going through fecal incontinence, I would not wish that on anybody. And so it's remembering that, and also remembering that when I go through these periods, which I do, where, you know, I put value on the way my body looks, and I start to think, oh my God, like, what if I can't fit in my pre-pregnancy clothes? And then it's like, but I look at pictures of myself when I was at my skinniest, my most, in society's standards, the most beautiful, like, when I was modelling and when I had a six-pack or whatever, and I was miserable. I hated my life. I hated my relationship with food. Like, I felt like my body dysmorphia controlled me. Like, I couldn't even get myself dressed because I would, like, hate my body anyway. So I needed other people to tell me what I look good in. And I didn't have any self-esteem. And I feel like we're tricked into thinking that if we change or shrink or buy this lipstick or whatever it is, that way it's going to make us suddenly happy and it's going to give us acceptance, and it doesn't. And don't get me wrong, I love putting on a good lipstick, especially after, you know, a night of no sleep, putting on red lipstick. But ultimately, like, I think you just have to be grateful for, like, all the things that your body does. And it will, like, I've stopped putting pictures of, like, God, what did I do in my 20s? I'd have pictures of Emily Ratajkowski on my phone as, like, my body goal. And it's like, my body will never be her. So why am I trying to, like, and that will not make me happy. Like, it will not make me happy to have her body, but also I will never have her body. So I think it's just to, like, forgive yourself when you get caught up in, like, society's bullshit, but also remind yourself that actually, when we're lying on our deathbeds, it's not going to be like what we weighed or what size our clothes are or how we looked or even like what other people thought of our bodies, because that's it, isn't it? We're always going to be too big, too small, too this, too that for other people's opinions. But actually, it's like the memories, like going diving, climbing mountains, breastfeeding, all of those things that we remember, and actually, like, doesn't matter how our bodies look to do any of those things.
Well, no, because it's how you felt, isn't it? It's like how hard you laughed, how you cried tears of joy. Those are the things that actually, you know, you'll think about at the end, not, did my bum look weird in that skirt? Yeah. Like, you're never going to think about that.
And actually, probably it didn't.
It probably looked great.
Yeah.
More often than not, you look great. Like, I think that's a good note to end on. Ashley, thank you so, so much for joining us.
Thank you, and sorry for my over-enthusiastic child.
No, he has been an incredible guest as well, and I love his... he's like a little hype man, isn't he? Yeah. He's backing up Mummy's points. Ashley, how can our followers and listeners help support your work?
I think just find me on Instagram at Ashley Louise James, and if you want to listen to the podcast, if it's something that interests you around motherhood, I've got lots of episodes around adoption and IVF and all sorts, then yeah, check that out as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, I love that.
I love Ashley so much. I mean, I find her honesty around pregnancy so empowering. And I would really enjoy it if, I know I said this already, but if we could have the baby there every episode, that would really do bits for me. That would make me very happy. I'm like, God, I'm so broody.
I know. I wish I was there with you in person. It was one of those funny ones where the two of you were together and I just felt like I was looking in on a magical thing happening.
You were watching us like all crouched around a microphone with this baby on the couch. I was like, perfect. This is how magic gets made. I would love if we could shift gears a little bit and you could give me a lovely bowl of noodles, knowledge noodles. We spoke a lot about how postpartum is a very vulnerable time for women when it comes to body image. Can you talk a little bit about why this is?
Yeah, of course. And I think I'm mostly going to be echoing our conversation with Ashley, but I think that's a good thing. But essentially, I think it boils down to a couple of things, right? It comes down to the objectification of women, so the value we place on women's appearance above all else. It comes down to weight stigma in society, diet culture, and capitalism, because we all know how capitalism loves to profit off women's insecurities. And once we've moved past the teenage years, we can really find another like key market where people are feeling particularly vulnerable. And so as Ashley spoke about, like, the human body changes a lot during pregnancy. They don't magically transform back to the way that they were pre-baby, immediately following giving birth. And it's probably worth saying that for many people, their bodies stay different following having children. That is how bodies work. Bodies aren't meant to stay the same throughout your lifespan. That would actually be very bizarre if that were to happen.
The one constant in your life is that your body is going to change. Like, you can count on that. Like, your body will never be... Your body's not even the same body as it was yesterday, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Of like, on a molecular level, on a cellular level, you are never the same person. So I'm like...
And we're all constantly shedding.
Shedding dead skin.
Especially if you exfoliate, you know, it gets rid of it faster, moving to the next stage of your personality. It's good.
So getting back to the point,
yes.
Our bodies change. Definitely in pregnancy, bodies change. And then because of the reasons listed above, so objectification of women, weight stigma, diet culture, and capitalism, like, there's this huge cultural expectation that women get their pre-baby body back, or at least strive to. So we also like celebrate and reward the work. So if you're like trying to get that body back, society, culture, it's like, oh yeah, no, we can get on board with that. So you've got all of this pressure.
It's a term of like snapback, isn't it? Which even in itself is such a toxic term, of the idea anything in your body could ever just snap back. It's not possible. Even if you exercise all you want, that's not how bodies work. That's not what skin is like. Like, come on, guys.
I know. And I think it's like worth saying, like, the pressure comes from everywhere. It's like very omnipresent, right? So it's like from the media, so our traditional TV and film, but it's also social media. But then as well, it's from our friends, our family, our partners, random people on the internet who feel that they want to give a little comment on someone's appearance. So we have all of this pressure, and this pressure and the messaging is all about women should be focusing on their bodies following having a baby. That should be their priority. They should be focusing on getting that pre-pregnancy body back as quickly as possible. And linking back to the capitalism point, the diet culture point, it's like you should be buying all of these different things. So you should be subscribing to different regimes and different plans, and emulating different people to try and get this thing. And like, our bodies all work differently. So as much as our bodies change over time, two people's bodies can respond very differently. So it's not, what you do will not necessarily be the same, or it's that, it's going back to that point of people's bodies respond differently. So some people's bodies do, people do lose weight, some people don't. Like,
yes, look, like, some people, I don't want to single any people out, but there are people who somehow miraculously look the same or very similar, and like, everybody's different. Like, that is the thing. But it's, what's not helpful is the comparison culture and making women feel bad, or making birthing people, people who've given birth, feel bad about how their body has changed, because they've already got enough, they're already being bombarded enough with negative messaging. It's very fascinating and very bleak. So, are postpartum women at a higher risk of disordered eating as well?
Yes, so that's very consistent with social cultural theory of body dissatisfaction and disordered eating. So if we're focusing on postpartum women, if we're following the tripartite inference model of body dissatisfaction, as an example, when women internalise and buy into societal messaging that they need to lose their baby weight, and or find themselves constantly comparing their bodies with other women who appear to have lost the weight potentially, so going into that comparison culture that you're talking about, and both of those things, both of those mechanisms of internalisation and comparison are a response to societal pressure from friends, family, partners, the media. So we have these sources of pressure, we can have these two different mechanisms that can work in parallel, and then in response we see that pathway towards people feeling worse about their bodies, so feeling more dissatisfied with their bodies, but we also see them feeling worse in general, so experiencing low mood. And to your question, they're also at higher risk of disordered eating. So we've got the pathway from the sources of pressure, the two mechanisms of internalization and comparison, and then we have body dissatisfaction, low mood, and disordered eating. So it's very much a visual thing, or easier to follow visually.
Hearing you talk about it again just makes me so frustrated when you're like, this is the time when, one, women are so isolated. Like, I think a lot of new mums feel really lonely, like that is something that we know, and then to be lonely and experiencing these pressures, it just makes me so angry of like the pressures from all of these outside sources. I'm like, oh my god, it's not like they've just fucking grown a whole human inside them. Like, can women catch a fucking break ever?
Right, and as a bit of a side note, so when I was looking at some of the studies that are out there on postpartum and body image and disordered eating, there was a study that I came across published a few years ago in the journal Body Image, led by Megan Lovering. They found that approximately 80% of the 474 postpartum women in their study had their post-pregnancy target weight. But what stood out to me, on average, that target weight was about 12 pounds lighter than their pre-pregnancy weight. So it's not like they're just... So
it's not saying I want to be how I was before I had a baby. It's I want to be... Well, it's almost like I want to be the version of me pre that. It's like... It's shrinking yourself.
Or a version of you... Yeah, or a version of you that you've never been before.
Yeah.
Right? So I think then if we're thinking about the question of, is postpartum linked to an increased risk of disordered eating? If you're not only trying to lose the... quote baby weight, but you're also trying to get down to a lower weight, so 12 pounds is almost a stone in UK metrics at speed, in response to all of the toxic societal pressure that we have, the chances are you are going to be resorting to crash diets, you are going to be engaging in some really unhealthy eating behaviors, and the likelihood is that you're not going to feel particularly good. And to all the points that you made about women also feeling, being vulnerable to feeling lonely and postnatal depression and that whole cluster of factors, that is like a whole cluster of factors of leading into disordered eating. And we know from other research more broadly, so not necessarily looking at postpartum, but just in general, that we know that dieting, as well as other psychological factors like low self-esteem, like low mood, are risk factors for disordered eating, eating disorders anyway. So definitely a vulnerable time for disordered eating for people who have just had a baby. So yes, postpartum is a vulnerable time for women when it comes to relationship with food and bodies. And that's because of all the societal pressure that is out there on how women should look and how much value is placed on women. But in the same breath, it's really important and worth stressing that having a baby can transform someone's body image and relationship with food in a positive direction. So having a baby can help foster that greater appreciation of what bodies can do, so body functionality. And it can also be a transitional time for people to take a bit of a step back and be like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to like opt out and unsubscribe from some of these societal appearance pressures, because actually my focus is on something else.
And, you know, kind of taking it back to what Ashley was saying, you can really help people who have just had babies by, you know, opting out of that kind of body talk, weight chat, all of those things. You know, it's not helpful, and chances are you are probably exacerbating an already, you know, vulnerable mind state for a new parent. So let's not do that. Nadia, thank you so much for this delicious helping of noodles.
You're very welcome, and what another lovely episode of season 4.
Thank you so much for listening to the Body Protest podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, and it would mean the world to us if you could rate, review, share and subscribe.
You know what to do. And if you're left wanting more, why not check out our new Patreon for some exclusive bonus content. You can now also drop us an email at thebodyprotest@gmail.com.
This podcast is produced by the sensational Daisy Grant, and our dreamy music is by Eve Garland. And our new Knowledge Noodle jingle is by Zane Morris.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.